Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. This morning we're going to revisit a company that we spotlighted last year at this time, Nokomo Industries in Maryville. Nokomo is a sheltered workshop that employs developmentally disabled persons throughout the county. Since October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, I thought it would be only fitting to revisit Nokomo so that we can make you aware of some very important changes that are coming down the pike for sheltered workshops across the country and right here in the state of Missouri. In just a few minutes, I'll sit down with Nokomo's general manager as well as their board president to learn about the proposed legislation. So please, stick around as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development. Coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at MarylandMO.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course opening this May. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at MazingoLake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Once again, welcome to Spotlight on Industry. As I said before, the month of October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, so we want to bring you up to speed on some pending legislation that will greatly impact shelter workshops across the state. I'm joined by Nokomo's Board President Dave Lawyer and General Manager Nikki Sampson. Good morning to both of you and welcome to Spotlight.
Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Sam. Thank you for having us.
So, Nikki, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this pending legislation, remind our listeners about Nokomo's mission and tell us a little bit about the people who work there.
Nokomo Industries is a Missouri sheltered workshop. We've been in Nottoway County since we've had our building in 1973. We employ people that possess a skill set that they could not be successful out in competitive employment as you and I can. And we also state in our mission statement that not only will they be an employee of this community, that we in fact will give back to our community through our work. They'll also gain camaraderie among people that are as like as they are in their skill sets. And we take a lot of pride, and that's why we say we provide dignified employment for those with disabilities. And we have a wide range of folks that we employ with a wide range of disabilities. People that have attended state schools all the way to college graduates, that has one barrier or another that prevents them from being successful in competitive employment, and they choose to work for a sheltered workshop.
Now, there's a term there that you threw out a couple of times, competitive employment. Define that for our listeners so that they know what that means.
Competitive employment, in difference, the word sheltered workshop, the word sheltered, let's focus on that for just a second. The word sheltered means that a person is able to work based on their skill set, i.e. they get paid 100% of what they are able to do. Unlike the competitive market out there where if you get hired, you make minimum wage or more, and nobody really, to the T that we have to, if you will, monitors and measures what it is your productivity really is. And so in a sheltered employment environment, you have the option if you have health issues that prevent you and you have to miss a lot of work because you have to tend to those. We want people to be at work. We expect them to be at work, but you don't have 3 days in your out type policies mm-hmm. where you do at a competitive employment. I'll use, you know, one of the factories here in town. Their line's got to run. It's got to run at a certain speed every day to have X amount of production. Not to say that we don't have forecast and deadlines, but you're not pressured to meet those. And the truth is you don't have the ability to meet those. And the competitive side of it is you would be unemployed if you couldn't meet them in the competitive market set. At the sheltered workshop, it allows everybody to work at their own skill set, their own speed, where we challenge them every day to be successful and grow and learn different skill set, but they're not on the edge of being released or dismissed because they don't possess those skills to maybe do 100 pieces a day. Maybe their absolute best is 50 pieces a day, which is half of what you and I may be able to do.
Thank you for that. I think that will help our listeners understand a little bit better the difference between sheltered workshop and the competitive employment that we're going to talk about. So let's kind of get into this legislation. So this is something that our listeners probably aren't going to be aware of if you don't have a family member who's involved with NACOMO in one way or the other, but it's something that's very important. So let's talk about this legislation that's coming down the pike, and if you would just define that, and I'll throw that question out to either one of you that wants to answer that.
It's a new federal regulation, and I shouldn't say it's new. The WIOA Act stands for the Work Initiative Opportunity Act in the United States. It's been an act that's been in place for a long time, and it comes with rules and regulations of what's expected in the laboring market. What is affecting workshops is that at this point, and we are monitored by Department of Labor, Missouri Department of Education, Special Education, we're monitored at the federal, state, county, and then I have a board of directors. We're monitored all over the place to make sure that we pay the people fairly for their production. But we hold a certificate called commensurative wage certificate, and that means that we're allowed to pay below minimum wage but 100% of what a person is able to produce. One of the things that people don't understand is there are people in sheltered workshops that do make minimum wage or above. And a lot of them, there's 98 shops in the state. What the WIOA rule has came out and said, and I'll use the acronym from here on if I may, is, and the part of it, they've had a lot of changes. They've changed the minimum what you can pay a person to be a salaried employee now. It's more than doubled. There's a lot of rules and regulations. Matter of fact, 980-some pages of them. The nutshell of how it affects workshops throughout the United States is that they want to make sure that everybody that is in a workshop absolutely positively cannot work out in the competitive employment. And there's two things that are being targeted, if you will, by advocating groups. And that is the advocating groups of this that they're trying to tag on with these rules and regulations is that everybody in the United States should make minimum wage or more, and that they should not be segregated. And those are our two biggest issues with Missouri Sheltered Workshops. The rules and regulations as they set right now is, some of the changes they've made, is a person was always referred by vocational rehab, which is the VR department. If they went through, they said that this is their skill set, maybe this is their individual educational plan from school, this is what they've been able to achieve up to this level, they would not be successful out working in competitive employment, a sheltered workshop would be a good fit for them. Now what has happened is they won't allow anyone age 25 or younger to go directly into a sheltered workshop in the United States. They must open a VR, vocational rehab, file. They have to go through several levels of trainings, interacting. Basically, what we feel like as the Managers Association is, there are people that at the end of the road, that's still going to be the best fit for them, but they're trying to make sure that the people don't lose out on another opportunity or choice. And our point of view is the person's skill set is what their skill set is, and they should not be taking away their choice of going into a sheltered workshop. And that's one of the biggest impacts is that the other change to the rules and regulations was once you were in a Missouri sheltered workshop and you had, they call it a certification saying that you meet the criteria to be working in a sheltered workshop, then that's what it was. And you could work there and as long as you so chose. Now, they like 6 months. The regulation states every year you're to bring in every employer, no matter how long they've worked for you. Maybe an employee's worked for you for 30 years, and you bring them in if they're their own guardian, or bring them in with their guardian, and VOC Rehab and the manager and their loved ones and whomever else they choose to be involved, you bring them in there and you have to basically say to them, is this really where you want to work? Would you like to try something else? And I really don't support that in the fact that we have never held anybody to working in sheltered workshops. We've always had an open door. If it's a good fit for you, you meet the criteria, we want to provide you with dignified employment, and this is your place. But now it's being regulated saying that it is a must. It's called person-centered planning, which Nokomo Industries has been doing since I got there in 2010. And making sure, and if I've had anyone that has the skill set or has risen to that skill set, which the percentage is less than 1%, then we have tried that. 99% of them have returned back to workshop setting because they were not successful.
And just so that we're completely clear, this is legislation that's coming at the federal level, not at the state level.
Exactly. And I would like to mention one of the biggest issues for me as a manager is Missouri's business model is that we earn a great deal of our own revenue, if you will. Up to 70% is the average for a lot of the shops across the state, 89 of them or more. And the rest of the states are actually Medicaid programs where they bill Medicaid hourly for services. So we have been, and I think we're doing it right, we have been paying a person 100% of what they're able to do for 50 years now and been very successful, and the people's been very successful. We really have no complaints at Nokomo that I've ever heard of on the pays the least of their concerns. It's the camaraderie, the self-esteem, the giving back, everything that you and I value in our jobs, except they don't have the hunger or the desire or even the understanding of the monetary value. And they don't have the skill set to be successful in any other environment.
Mm-hmm. Nokomo, as we talked about last year at this time, had their financial challenges. You've overcome that now, and Nokomo actually is very financially secure. Is that correct, Dave?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we have put ourselves in a very favorable financial position over the last 6 years. The changes that are coming at us are going to be substantial, but they're not insurmountable. And I think we're well positioned to weather the storm, if you will, and come out the other side sound, able to continue to provide dignified employment for our people. And that's kind of the goal and the marching orders. You know, the board's engaged. Nikki is engaged at the state level, locally. You know, we've got great leadership on an everyday basis in the workshop. The folks who come there every day to work love their jobs. We do a lot of things for them. And we're hoping that soon everybody can kind of get their arms around the changes that have been thrust upon us, deal with them. And VOC Rehab, you know, is kind of in that mix now in a way that I think was a surprise to them. So they're, you know, reeling from this as well, trying to get in a position where they can provide the kind of services they're going to need to provide. And hopefully, you know, we come out the other side and a lot of the other workshops come out the other side and we go forward and have a bright future.
These changes don't have an impact solely on the employee. It certainly affects Nokomo as a business because, as Nikki had said earlier, you know, we're paying employees, and I say we because I sit on this board as well. We pay employees 100% of what they're capable of. The new legislation will force us to pay them a federal minimum wage, correct?
Correct. And the impact of that is going to be substantial. It will. If you took a snapshot of one fiscal period versus another with the minimum wage in place, it would essentially double our payroll to our sheltered employees. We have always had a few people who made minimum wage. We've added probably 15 here just over the last couple months since we knew this was coming to try to, you know, ease into this. But at the end of the day, you know, that's not a number that really scares any of us. We'll find ways to come up with that kind of revenue, and we'll march on.
And so with that being said, let's kind of shift back to the people, because at Nokomo, that's really what matters, is the people that work for Nokomo. So, Nikki, if we have folks who are going to be forced into competitive employment, what impact is that going to have on the individual as well as the workforce at Nokomo?
Well, I believe it's going to be a negative impact, and I would like to clarify, because I don't want to point fingers. I don't think that the people that were and still are advocating for this, I really feel like I need to make a clarification here. Right now, the federal ruling is that stands is the fact that they need to be visited by voc rehab on a regular basis, minimum of once a year, ideally every 6 months, to ask if that's really where they want to be. Anyone under 25 cannot go directly in workshop. That is what has impacted us directly, straight on. There are groups and organizations that are advocating for the other two, that we have to pay minimum wage and that the folks not be segregated. And with those two lead-ins is where this is going to tie in. The fact, I'm really kind of appalled, and I don't think it was intentional by any means. We don't have any second-class Americans. Everybody wants. The money's never been the issue, as you mentioned. If we could pay them $1 million an hour, that would be great. I just don't know where the money's going to come from. You know, it just is not feasible. I would take $1 million salary. I think everybody in this room would take $1 million salary. Do we deserve it? I guess that's up for discussion. However, it's not about what the folks deserve. It's about them having the integrity and their self-esteem and their self-worth to do a day's work for a day's pay based on their ability. I think, and I feel pretty comfortable saying this, if I had worked for a business even 6 months and a boss called me in along with a VR rep and possibly my guardian, if that be the situation, and whomever else is going to be requested or needed to be at this table, and said, do you really like it here? Do you really want to work here? Are you really comfortable here? I've mentioned, and I want to be very respectful, because the disability is what get them in the door. The ability is what keep them there, because that's my job to focus on their skill set for work at hand. But I can't help but feel, and I feel very strongly about it and very passionate about it, if someone did that to me, and I do work in competitive employment, I would feel as if I wasn't wanted there, if I wasn't needed there. And I think that that is very detrimental to our people's self-esteem. It takes everybody time to earn another person's trust. We call ourselves the Nokomo team. We're very close-knit. I've referred to it several times. We're if we are extended family. There's things that they may or may not understand. It's things you and I may not understand. Theirs may be a little more an assumption that they would understand something, but they may very well not. We're there to help them with that as well as their employment. Sometimes they'll get mail. They're their own guardian. They don't understand. And I really just feel like the impact on them, that you're taking away a choice. I don't have anyone at Nokomo Industries working there on our Nokomo team that doesn't want to be there, and I feel about that very strongly. If they didn't want to be there, they're not held there. That's where they want to be. That is their place. And I think it's going to have a very detrimental effect on the individual's self-esteem, their self-worth. I am really against setting somebody up for failure, no matter who it is. And if they do not possess the skills set to work in competitive employment, and they feel as if they're being forced out in there, if they're not doing enough, if you will, if they get that in their head is the thing that these people want me to go out and try competitive employment, or even that we say you could be successful, because that's what we're trying to tell them. In a sense, they may think that's what's being said to them, and then they fail. I really am having a hard time being on that side of the fence, being that person. I just think that it really, the intentions were good. I think the outcome is a house of cards. I think some people are realizing that now at the federal level about there are and always have been and always will be. We are not an outdated model. There's always going to be a set of folks that the sheltered workshop is their choice. It is their best fit for their employment needs. And that's never going to change. It's just now we've got to kind of put on the brakes if we can. And my main reason for working in Tacoma and will always stand is I'm going to, in whatever way I can, protect our people in whatever ways I see fit. So circling back to how I think it's going to affect them, I think it's almost borderline non-cruel to ask somebody if that's really where they want to be when that's where they've chosen to be to begin with.
Dave, what are your final thoughts on the topic?
Well, I think, you know, we've had a lot of challenges in the 6 years I've been associated with the workshop, and, you know, this is just another one. It's one that I think we're well-suited and well-positioned to deal with, and we need to. I mean, there's 40 people that walk through those doors every day, and potentially there could be more. You know, we need to make sure that we secure a future for them, that they have a place to go every day. And not just for those folks, but for their families as well. I mean, there are some pretty serious consequences, I think, for a lot of families in the county if the workshop were to close. And we're going to do everything we can to keep that from happening.
One last thing before I kind of wrap this up in its entirety. If our listeners feel as strongly about this as the two of you do, who can they call? Do they need to contact their congressman, their senator? What's a step that our listeners can take to let their voices be heard?
I've been serving on a committee of, there's about 18 of us managers throughout the state of Missouri that we've been developing a committee that we've got a campaign that we're going to be launching here shortly called Dignity Has a Voice. And along with that, we have an advocating group called an A-Team, and that is where individuals can get involved, and they advocate for basically any need of people with disabilities, but one of them is employment, and it is to please leave Missouri Sheltered Workshops as an option, as a choice. Don't take away the choice. So they're more than welcome. At this point, they're more than welcome to contact me. I am engaged in this, would like to see a team chapter start in not only our county, but maybe our area, which takes in some other sheltered workshops. We call it Area 1, and there's five or six of us in that area. And, you know, there's strength in numbers. They, at the federal level, are aware of us. They are aware of our concerns. We have, through this committee and through our association, retained some advocates and people that are actually working for us, being paid to work for us to advocate on our behalf to make sure that they completely understand not only the impact but the Missouri work model, because we've came to learn at the federal level they didn't really know there was any difference between Missouri and all the other states. But we're very optimistic in the fact that at this point, and I don't want to call it a mistake because I'm not one of the decision makers at that level in Congress and the Senate and places, but I think, as I said again, I don't think there was any ill intentions, but I think it's becoming very quickly known that this probably wasn't one of the best decisions that's been made. So I'm very optimistic that workshops will sustain. There will be a place for our people. And to answer your question directly, they're more than welcome to contact me at Nakomo Industries. The telephone number there is 660-582-2928. I'll be more than glad to explain to people what I know at this time. We will be taking a list of people that would like to become part of this A-Team. At this point, we have not announced it to our certified employees yet, because when we do things like that, we, as Dave mentioned, we do a lot of things for them. It comes with a T-shirt, and the T-shirt has not yet been designed, so I don't want to get my cart before my horse here, but they are more than welcome, and we are going to need those people. We need the voice of why it makes sense. And one thing I wanted to tag on this, if I may, we are talking about the people, and that is the number one. I work for them. I have a lot of people I answer to, but I work for those people we employ, period. And my staff's very aware of that. That's what we do. It's not about our jobs. It's about them having a choice of employment that fits their skill set. But also the impact that I want people to think about, and it should be enough that it's for our people. But it also will have an economic impact on our customers. We do a day's work for a day's pay. There are a lot of people that we service in the industry that if we went away, it's going to affect their bottom line in a very negative way. And if people have questions about that, I'll be more than willing to discuss that as well. We're an open book. We want to remain that way. We've not ever lost our vision, and that is we provide dignified employment for those with disabilities.
All right. Nikki, Dave, thank you very much. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Sam.
That's Nikki Sampson, General Manager of Nekomo Industries in Maryville, and Nekomo's Board President, Dave Lawyer, speaking about the pending legislation at the federal level that will affect sheltered workshops in the state of Missouri. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Nikki will lead us on a tour of this surprisingly large operation. Stick around.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, the park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazingo is at mazingolake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
When entering Nekomo's facility, the first thing that surprised me was how busy it was. The employees enjoy their work, the camaraderie, and the sense of purpose it gives them. It's a very brightly lit, clean, and organized environment. The workspaces are laid out according to the skill level of the employees. Separating paper forms doesn't require as much skill as running a fork truck or building pallets. With that being said, each employee is assigned to a room that fits their skill level and disability. By doing so, each person has the ability to be successful in their work. The first room we entered had a number of employees separating rolls of paper. These are paper forms that come from Deluxe Corporation in Maryville. In their process, they print business forms that are wound around a PVC core. Those forms that are closest to the core are unusable for business purposes, but the paper is certainly recyclable. Of course, it can't be recycled as long as it's on the core. The employees unspool the forms and put them into recycle bins to be baled and shipped.
The room that we're in is our production room A. Everything we do at Nekomo has a recycling basis to it, if you will, and I'll kind of explain that as we go on. In this particular room, we have it divided into a couple of different workshops. You can see a large number of people working in here. What we do is these are called end rolls that we get from Deluxe, and we take the paper off the end rolls, and then those are the cores, it's the center of them, and those have to be cleaned and they're reused. So that they would not be thrown away, they can reuse them again. So we make a trip out to Deluxe at least once every day. We make the cores for them. We also clean the cores for them and then recycle the end rolls of the paper to eliminate it from going to the landfill. Also at this end down here, we are where gloves used to be worn and then thrown away after they were dirty and used or maybe torn or tattered. We have different companies that we work with, and they have those washed at a different location and sent in to us. And we sort the bags, and we pair them back up in groups of 6 or 12, or depending whatever the company wants us to do. And while we were pairing them, we're sorting them too. So at work, at the different places, they just tell the workers, when you're done with your gloves, please throw them in the dirty clothes bin. They're washed, brought to us. We sort them. If they're worn and cannot be used, then they're separated out. The ones that are good and can be used are repackaged and sent back out, and they reuse them again. And that is a great savings where they used to all be just thrown away.
Sure.
So that's what's going on in Production Room A. In Production Room B, we do most of our package assembly and sorting in this room. It's kind of a multi-purpose room. So We're right here where things are sent in flat in cardboard boxes. We're assembling them, send them to local companies so that they can put their product in and then send them out to their customers. And this room's changed out. We can be doing anybody's work. We work with Kawasaki. We work with Deluxe. We work with Moog. We work with some with Laclede. I don't want to leave anybody out. We work with the wool shop. We work with some companies up in Iowa doing pallets. We work with, there really is not a business in town that we haven't done something for at some point that I can think of. So that's production room A and B. This is production room C. And it is where we can cut the larger cores. We have people over cutting the larger cores because, as you can see, some of them are very, very large. We've got them in different parts of the room where a person, we either have to cut them on the cutters or even hand cut them to get them down to a more manageable size for production room A to use them. So it's definitely a flow that we have here. It comes into here and then we get them so that we can do there. We get the cores cleaned and back out to Lux and it starts all over again.
And these cores, are they PVC pipe? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yes, they're PVC pipe that are notched to the specs that work on their particular printers and presses. And there are several different sizes. We have bins out here that as they're cleaned, they're put in, and we return those bins when they're full or when they need them. And we're very blessed to have that work. We've got good paper. We know exactly. Our brokers know exactly. They're getting 100% of exactly what we're selling them as far as product. This is our horizontal baler. This is a tipper. And when it's full of product that we're running for that day, it tips it up in there, runs down, and then it becomes a very large bale, and I'll show you that. So that's production A, B, and C, and we're going to go to upper warehouse now. One thing that I get a comment on a lot is, while you're really busy as you look around and you see several people just doing their thing like you would at any other employer, and two, this place is much bigger than it appears from the outside. In the upper warehouse, the horizontal baler dumps out into the upper warehouse, and then we have three other balers that we run down here, and you can see an individual leaving right now. Those are the Gaylords that I had mentioned in the northwest corners. We have people come and go all day and all night long filling up our different product. So anyhow, in production room C, he dumps out down into here. The horizontal baler runs all products that we run. We primarily reserve these that are called vertical balers. We primarily reserve those just for cardboard. We can run any other product in there, but we primarily reserve this for cardboard and let the horizontal take care of the rest of it. Just to the east of the balers, you'll see our sort line that I mentioned earlier, the second sort line we put in. And it actually gets fed from the lower warehouse, but product comes up here. We have individuals that sorts out the product so that we can know if we're baling cardboard, plastic, tin, whatever it is that we're baling goes into the right container, and the container can be brought to the baler in which it's going to bale. So it's just a little factory just continuously on the move.
It really is surprising how busy it is.
Yes,
it's and
very
industrial.
Busy. Yes, it is. And people, that's why and my closing comments about what I'd like to say is I really would encourage people to come down and see who we are and what we do. A great deal of my time in the last 5 years, a little over 5 years now, has been spent to educate the community, not because they were ignorant, because I don't know that they've ever had the opportunity or really understood. We are a real business doing real work. We weigh all of our bales when they're taken out of the baler and complete, so every broker knows that they're getting exactly what we told them they'd be getting. So if you'd like to follow me, we can go down to our lower warehouse. I apologize for the noise. We found that the music is very much appreciated by our employees here. So we play music, and I always tell people, we work hard and we play hard. So here's our skid loader that I mentioned, and what he does is, and this too is a certified employee, he runs that skid loader all day long, and this is a product that's been brought in from different haulers throughout the community, and it's just a continuous wheel. They dump here at their convenience. We don't have to be here, and we just pick it up, put it in there, sort it out, bale it, and sell it.
And I'm seeing there's a little bit of everything in there. I'm seeing cardboard boxes. I'm seeing a little plastic mixed in. I'm seeing what I'm sure is garbage, mixed in that shouldn't be, but it's there.
And unfortunately, the garbage is pretty much to a minimum. Our haulers really do a pretty good job, and I'm thankful to the community because, that's why I'd like to make it known and talk to your haulers and let them know. Nobody wants to go through your trash, and the haulers do a pretty good job letting people know, hey, this is what this is for, and this is what this. So we're pretty blessed in the fact where, you know, we talked earlier about when I first got here, we had a thrift store, and my board president, Dave Lawyer, made the comment publicly, we are closing the East End dump. And so we are really monitoring that very quickly and closely, and we'll nix it pretty quickly if need be. We're not going to be going through your trash. So we do appreciate it. We get a lot of good product, and everybody's been very respectful of that.
So considering the number of things you take, maybe it's better to talk about the things that you don't take or you can't take.
Well, I'll tell you what's probably been the hardest product to educate people on, if you will, and that's been the plastics. If it does not have a number 1 through 7, we can't take it. We can't take it. Yes, there's a lot of items made out of plastic. I can't even begin to tell you how many grades of plastic there are out there. And when you sell them to brokers, certain grades are used for something else. And if the 1 through 7s, we bail together. We do not sort them. That's all we can take. So we've had people that have occasionally dropped off siding. You know, they wanted to be a good contributor. We cannot take siding. Siding is not a 1 through 7. We cannot take old television cases and things. Those are all a different type of plastic. We primarily take a lot of water bottles, milk jugs, you know, the box that your cat litter might come in, but they have to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7, or it does not meet the grade that we take.
Good. That's good to know.
We do also take tin cans, and that's something that I've been trying to educate people on, like your vegetables, fruits and vegetables and things you buy at the store. That's another grade that we picked up, is we do take all the tin cans so people can start, because those are, you know, will not, they will not degrade in the landfill, and they can really cause some problems over time. As far as if you throw a lot of tin in an area for quite a time, you run out of space and it kills our environment. And so we really are encouraging people to donate their tin as well.
Now, one thing that I don't see, and I think that must be hard to recycle, is glass. Any plans to start taking glass in the future?
We do not take glass, and a lot of people say because there's no money in it. There's a lot of product that's out here that I would say are really no money type products as a community service. But glass, with the folks that we work with and the system it is to recycle, glass cuts. We're going to stay away from glass. We've had the opportunity. We are just going to stay away from glass. One, if you've looked around, we are pretty full here. The only other than this lower warehouse is our outer lot, and that's where we put some of our pallets and things because we build for people. We have contracts, and we have to have so many in stock for them at any given time. We are really, at this point, kind of busting at the seams. And so we're not going to add any more grades at this time. And glass definitely is not something that's in our forecast. It's just a good way to possibly get somebody injured. And we really don't have any real good place to do it. So
that's good to know, so that if people are going to contact their trash haulers to make sure that they don't include glass.
Yes, please. It's just too dangerous for it. With glass, the only way you can recycle glass and make it, because of being, you know, it takes up so much space, is you have to crush that glass. And glass doesn't always just crush immediately, and it causes sharp, you know, pieces and things, and we're just going to stay away from it. We just don't think it's a good fit for our folks.
And here I see a pallet of what will eventually become cores.
Yes.
For the paper rolls that we saw earlier.
Yes, those are 10-foot length. I believe these particular ones are 10-foot, 10 or 12-foot, and we will cut those down for all different size cores. You know, it's really nice to be able to, we have work for as far out as I can see, and it's not just for our folks. You know, we are really want to be a community partner, and it really, it's a nice feeling to know that everyone's busy. Everybody we're doing work right now for and growing that every day are also really solid and doing some hiring and expanding, and it's a really a good feeling to know that, that folks have an opportunity to be out there working. And we really, you can look over, you can see the gloves. We have at least 10 more, at least 10 more full carts of those to do. We've got, like I said, we've got a long list of work to be done for a long, long time, and that's, it's great. We're blessed to be able to have that.
Now, you had mentioned that you build pallets, and I'm seeing some wood stacked up. Uh-huh. Tell me a little bit about the pallet operation.
That's the last place we're going to go into. I'm going to take you into the wood shop they're actually building today. But what you're seeing out here in our upper warehouse is we have, as I mentioned, contracts with folks that we build pallets for, and we know their lengths that they use, and they have to be certain lengths and certain sizes. So they're with their customers, the racking's why that is. People always ask what their product goes on, but when you rack and store things in a warehouse, it's everything here is a kind of a domino effect on the next step. So we want to be meaningful and appreciative of that. But these have been cut to length, so we order in bulk lumber, and then we don't order pre-cut, but then we cut that lumber to service our contracts, and then after we've cut it, then we assemble it. Okay. So before we leave the recycling area, I just wanted to mention and give thanks. There's an annual conference, it's called MORA, and it's the Missouri Organization Recycling Association. And they have a conference annually. It's always in September. And this year it's in Blue Springs. Last year it was in Springfield. But this year I was just notified that we are going to be receiving an award for outstanding nonprofit for our recycling efforts, and not only the numbers, but the different commodities that we take. And that will be taking place mid-September. I believe it's the 14th. They'll be handing out those awards. And so I'm very proud of my team because we are, it's called the Outstanding Nonprofit Recycler for the year. And we are the recipient of that this year. And so that I'm very, very, very proud of our staff and our certified employees for getting us at that level where we're recognized, not only at the state, but at the federal. Those go down as a recording, and it's recording of what we're doing. And we know we're traced through the environmental industries in different places. And we're really making a mark. We're really making a mark out there.
That's excellent. That's something to certainly be proud of.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it.
One of the reasons that we wanted to focus on Nokomo Industries for the month of October is because it has been designated as a Disabilities Awareness Month. Is that correct?
That is correct. The whole month of October has been dedicated as Disability Awareness Month. And that is not only just for sheltered workshops, but that's for anybody with any type of disability, just to make people more aware and more sensitive, and hopefully to be more willing for inclusion and realize that there may be need some adaptations made for that inclusion to happen, but just to let people know that people that have disabilities, that they're people that are included, we want included, they're not forgotten, and make us more aware if we are not diagnosed with a disability, that those folks are very, very much a part of our community and should be.
As we moved out of the recycling and warehouse areas, our next stop was the wood shop, where they build pallets for various customers. As we'll learn, this is a very highly skilled job within the organization, but keep in mind that the work is being done by people who are developmentally disabled. It serves as a reminder that there's a spectrum of disabilities, and an employer like Nokomo is a place where people of various abilities and skills can find meaningful work that suits them.
This part here, and I apologize for the noise, is our actually our wood shop, and I'm very impressed with our wood shop and very proud of our wood shop. It is like any other wood shop, full-fledged factory, kind of little factory of its own, if you will. We do cutting, we do building, we make jigs for the things we do, we design things for people that don't know exactly what they need or want, and we have very skilled laborers out here. You notice we're running saws, we're running guns, we're running notcher down there. These are all equipment that you would find in any sawmill or any workshop, wood shop, anywhere. They're the very same tools, and you have to have the very same skills to run them.
Let's take a look at how this process works.
Okay.
smells good in here, too.
I know, and I like that cut lid. We take our sawdust. People use our sawdust for a filler for some of their farms and things, so it's even recycled.
And that's a common theme that we see through all the industry that we do is recycling, reusing. Nothing goes to waste.
Nothing goes to waste. Our actual trash is very, very minimal. Very minimal. So right now what we have a couple of fellas doing here is, as I talked about our bulk wood, is cutting these down to lengths to be able to get them ready for another set or two sets of folks to build some actual finished pallets, if you will. The machine back there in the left corner, we're very proud and happy of that too. We received a grant on that, and that actually is a notcher. And a notcher is where if you build a pallet, it's so that the forks on the truck can go all four ways. So we notch our own pallets as well. In the last two or three years is we put in industrial dust collectors. The notcher has to have one all of its own because it notches so quickly. And this one here, we can take those and we can turn them onto different machines. And so it's all about the health and safety of our employees and the environment that we have minimal that actually falls on the ground.
Well, and speaking of environment, just a couple of observations. Number one, it's incredibly clean. I can tell that this is a very safe environment for people to work in, considering the fact that they're working around dangerous equipment. So, very safe environment. It's very clean. I can see that every day they clean up anything that hits the floor.
You know, health and safety, and that's when we talked earlier about when I first got here, that had to be our number one. And we will not, you know, and some people didn't understand that because of happened to make some big changes. It's nothing that shouldn't have never been in place. But that was our number one, that was our focus, to get this place cleaned up, make it safe, make it healthy, make it to be a place people wanted to be, not a place they had to be. And I'm blessed to say and very happy and proud of the people that's contributed to that, say we're there and we're not going back.
As we left the wood shop, we walked through the break room where the employees were having their lunch. They all lit up when Nikki entered the room and were excited to have visitors. Many of them greeted her as we walked through. Hanging in the entrance that is adjacent to the break room was a special proclamation that Nikki had asked Governor Jay Nixon to sign. I asked Nikki to tell me about it.
A few years ago, we wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of what we do, and that is that we are a sheltered workshop, employ people with numerous different disabilities. So I took the initiative and got a hold of Governor Nixon and asked him if he would be willing to actually sign a proclamation saying that our workshop and all workshops in the state of Missouri and the day that the Senate bill started, and there's several different things in here, but the gist of it was that we wanted to identify that within that October month, recognizing those with disabilities, that Governor Nixon would make a proclamation sign, and it gave it to us, saying that we have a Disability Community Employment Week, which is the third week in October. So it not only is it the month of, but it's something special for those that are working with disabilities and contributing. And we were very fortunate and blessed that Governor Nixon was very excited about doing that for us and did, and we hang it proudly here in our front entrance for everybody to see. Something else that we did that's really pretty neat I'd like to explain to you is that we're the Nakomo team, and you'll hear me refer to that quite a bit, because disability is what gets you through the doors as a certified employee, but it's not what keeps you here. Focus it on your skills, what keeps you here and keeps you productive and dignifiedly employed. But one of the first things I did within my first couple months is here is we established an actual logo. And every committee that we have, certified employees serve on those committees as well. It's not staff or board decisions. It's all about who we work for and what we do. And this is the logo that we came up with for Nakomo. It was kind of funny because at first everybody wanted to be the Bearcats. So we had to have a little bit, because we love our Bearcats, but we had to have a little bit of discussion on the difference between a mascot and an actual company logo. But this is what we actually drew. And I drew it for us, and it's where you see the bumps where they all connect. Those are supposed to be our heads, and that's supposed to be us connecting as a team.
Okay.
And what we focus on is that no matter what you do for the team, every part of what we do here is important, and you're a valued part of the Nokomo team. So I sign everything the Nokomo team. We tell people we're the Nokomo team when we introduce them, and then you'll hear some of the employees say, this is what I do for the Nokomo team. And that's been very refreshing. Everybody likes to be included and appreciated, and I'm proud to say that I think that that is exactly what's going on here.
As we wrapped up our tour, the final story that Nikki shared with us was about their conference table. As she mentioned earlier, Nokomo is governed by a board of directors, and a few years back, the employees made a conference table out of pallet material. The craftsmanship that went into the table is outstanding, but what makes it even more special are a few of the other parts that were donated by local businesses. For instance, Maryville Glass and Lock donated the large piece of glass for the top, and KFC donated the base and the legs from the tables that were being replaced in the restaurant. Again, nothing goes to waste, and the community is very supportive of Nokomo Industries. It's a very special place that is full of people that are given the chance every day to live up to their potential and do meaningful work. If you'd like to learn more about Nokomo, visit their website at nokomo.org. I'd like to thank my guest this month, Nikki Sampson, General Manager of Nokomo Industries in Maryville, Missouri, and Nokomo's Board President, Dave Lawyer. Please join us next month as we turn our attention to another industry that we all literally couldn't live without, and that's healthcare. We'll sit down with SSM Health's Community Relations Manager, Rita Miller, to learn about the past and present of what was once called St. Francis Hospital. We'll also visit with SSM's President, Mike Baumgartner, who'll talk about the recent improvements to the emergency department and the future of healthcare in Northwest Missouri. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at MaryvilleMo.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.